And he came out with this form and said, Mr. Cook, he said, we're going to perform an operation on you. I want you to sign this form in case you die, saying that we won't resuscitate you. Now, the look on my dad's face was priceless. Hey, it was just kind of like a whop. So, and the word got out, and within about an hour or so, a palliative care doctor came who was amazing, who was just amazing. And I knew exactly what he was doing. He was getting Dad to face up to the reality of his own health situation. And this guy very, very artfully said to John, John, how long do you think you've got? And John said, I don't know. He said, do you think you've got a year? And Dad looked blank. He said, do you think you've got 6 months? He said, do you think you've got 3 months? And Dad looked blank and he said, John, I think it's the latter. And he said, if you've got something you need to say to your family and your loved ones, I would say it very shortly. Now, for my dad, that was a pretty hard thing to hear, but he did it beautifully, absolutely beautifully. Our last words, I've seen a lot of people pass away. Our last words are very important. And the last words of Jesus to his friends, these were his guys, are really important. Okay? And as recorded in John's gospel. So we're looking at these today. And I'm going to look at it in detail. So, and go through it very, very slowly. If you've got a Bible, it's great. If you haven't, it doesn't matter. So it's chapter 15, it's verse 9. Jesus says, as the Father loved me. Now, that is really loaded. Don't worry about that scripture, because that is our scripture for the year, and this is based around that. As the Father loved me. Okay, that's what he said. Now, this love of the Father is the anchor of Jesus' total ministry. It's the anchor of his total ministry, the Father's love. If he didn't have it, he would not have been able to do what he did. Now, this word love or loved, past tense, the word itself comes from the word agape, which some of you have probably heard about. It's a Greek word, agape, and this is the word for love. There's a number of words for love that the Greeks used, not like us. Westerners, we use love generally, and we don't really know quite what it is. It's all a mystery, yeah? But the Greeks did. So this word that is used by Jesus himself and is used throughout the New Testament by Paul as well is the word agape. And it's a past tense of the verb here. It's a doing word. It's a doing word. Okay? Now, as the Father loved me, Jesus says, implies that there is an action done through that love here on earth. As he's loved me. It's not a feeling, and it's not an abstract idea. Now, you remember, I was reminded of the story of Peter when, you remember, he denied Jesus and his soul was crushed. And he went out and he went fishing again. And then he met the resurrected Jesus on the beach. And you remember that time where Jesus spoke to him? And he asked him three questions. He said, Peter, do you love me? Do you remember around that fire? And Peter said, it doesn't capture it in English, but it says in English, he said, yes, Lord, you know I love you. Actually, it's interesting because Jesus says, he uses the word agape. Do you agape me? This divine high love. Do you agape me? And Peter says, yes, Lord, you know that I phileo you. Phileo means affectionate earthly love. And then Jesus says to him again, Peter, do you agape me? And he goes, again, Lord, you know that I phileo you. And then Jesus says again, he says, Peter, do you phileo me? Lord, you know that I phileo you. So Jesus comes from here and he meets Peter where he's at and affirms who he is. Let's explore a little bit what that divine agape love means. Consider how that love worked itself out, how the Father's love for Jesus worked itself out in Jesus' ministry. God affirmed Jesus. Think of the baptism of Jesus. He affirmed his identity. He affirmed his calling. He affirmed who he was. He then led Jesus. The Father led the Son into the wilderness, into the ministry. Nothing was haphazard. It was all done according to the Father's will. He then empowered Jesus. Healings, deliverances, teaching, feeding the hungry, turning water into wine, even raising people from the dead. He was empowered by the Father. And then he provided for him. He provided friendship. Don't underestimate that friendship. It's really important for all of us. The Father provided friendship for Jesus, his close friends, his disciples. He provided money. He provided food and provision. And he also gave him a job to do. Okay, he gave him a job to do, a purpose in the world. This is God's love in action. Now, if we look at the continuation of that verse, as the Father has loved me, Jesus continues, disciples and friends, so I have done for you. All right. Jesus affirmed the disciples' identity. He led the disciples. He taught the disciples. He protected the disciples. He empowered the disciples when he sent them out. He provided for the disciples. Think of the food, the miracle of the feeding of the 5,000. And he gave them a job to do, a purpose. Don't underestimate, and this will link into next week's sermon as well, don't ever underestimate the purpose that God has called you for. Because you'll find that that will give you so much energy and passion and purpose in this world that people won't be able to argue with it. The world will not be able to argue with it. But you need to discover that for yourself with the Father. So, we as followers of Jesus, we are affirmed, the same Father who Jesus was with, we are affirmed by him. We are led by him as his followers. We are protected by him, empowered by him, provided by him, and we are given a purpose. Now, I just want to give you a little example of how that works out. So, as far as being his children are concerned, okay, being his whānau, in England, when I was becoming a vicar, it took a long time. So I went for the first time and they said, no, we don't want you. And then, so I waited 5 years. Doesn't quite happen like this here. I waited 5 years, all right? And I was teaching. I was teaching at a posh private school and we were living on an estate nearby. Now, it became kind of awkward because I'd been teaching for, this is the fifth year, and I was teaching English and drama, and I had a student of mine who was quite bright but very lazy, and his mother was quite a busybody. So he was failing an assignment, and I saw them on a teacher day, I said, look, don't worry, Ross will be fine. And he failed the assignment, but I had a system where I could actually give him feedback through it. But anyway, so she went straight to the principal and complained about me, and long story short, 2 weeks before Christmas, Rue was pregnant. I think you're pregnant, don't you? Were you pregnant then? We had three young kids. We had three young kids. How old was Theo? Was he? Okay. So I got this official letter from the principal saying, you're being I'm summoning you to a meeting where you're going to be disciplined. Essentially, it was a nice word for sacked. So they want to sack me, him and the bursar, for whatever reason. I think I was probably too expensive as well, and they were under a bit of stress. So immediately I thought, oh, I'm in trouble. I called the union, and I joined the union very quickly. And they arranged for me a representative to come to the meeting. Now, I got a call from the union about 2 days before the meeting was meant to happen, and they said, Ian, I'm sorry, but your representative is ill and can't do the job anymore. I said, well, I'll try and delay the hearing. And the principal was going, no, we're going to do this. So I had no representative. The union called me back and said, Ian, we've got someone for you who's going to step in at the last moment. Okay, so the day came, the morning came, this woman arrived at this posh boarding school. She stepped out of this car. She had long, greasy hair, and she was a terrible dresser. And I looked at her and thought, I'm stuffed. Anyway, she came into my classroom. She sat down. She said, what's going on, Ian? We went through it. And she sat there for about two hours just writing stuff. Anyway, it turned out she was their top lawyer, for the union's top lawyer. She was amazing. All this time, I was praying like heck. Rue was beside herself. Christmas was looking gone. They knew exactly what they were doing. But this woman, despite how she looked, was totally onto it. They were quivering in their boots. And she got me enough respite to actually get the okay from the selection conference saying, yes, you go for ordination. So I didn't have to worry about the amount of time I gave them for leaving. I could do anything I wanted. I didn't go for money. I just wasn't interested in money. But they were worried. They were seriously worried. And that the point of that, during that time, I was reading the Psalms, and they came alive in a way that they'd never been alive to me before. How God will defend his children and stand behind them and have their back. So if you ever find yourself in a really difficult situation, read the Psalms. They'll come alive in a way that you have not seen them before. So God, the Father, the Holy Father, is our defender. He is our defender. He defends his children. He has their backs. And he had Jesus' back, even when he was on the cross. God had his back because he knew what he was going to do. So, this reading in verse 9 continues. So, as the Father has loved me, so I've done for you. I have loved you. I have loved you. So, what do we do in the face of this love? What do we do in response to this love? Verse 9 continues. So, Jesus said to his disciples, his friends, remain in my love. Remain in my love. Now, what does that mean? Remain in my love. Well, the Greek word for this is also a doing word. It's not a passive word. It's menate, which means to abide, to continue, to dwell, to endure, to be simply present, to remain in my love. Now, with the staff here, we have devotionals every morning. Heidi will testify to that. I'd say, come on, Heidi, let's come into the devotional. And we come in and we start the day actually in God's presence. Another thing we focus on is people developing their own ability to actually come and daily just spend 5 minutes with God. Our focus in verse last year was my sheep hear my voice. Do you remember? As his children, we expect in a relationship to actually hear God speaking to us. Most of us know what it's like in a relationship when maybe you've befriended someone and you don't get anything back. The relationship dies. Yeah, people, they don't phone, they don't worry about you. Or, okay, well, no one's investing in that relationship, I'll let it go. It's a two-way thing, a relationship. God is faithful and always will be, but it's a two-way thing. So, and on that note, remember we gave out the devotionals last year? We had a selection of devotionals at Lent. We'll do it again this year. But if you've used your devotional and it's just sitting there, please bring it back in so someone else can use it. Okay? But find something that works for you. Find something that works for you. Spend that time in the presence of agape love. It will change your life. As Rue was saying, we can't do it on our own. We're fooled if we think we can. Once we start doing that, then we'll need to start making decisions about our own actions because God will be involved. That's challenging. Some of us don't want that. We won't be able to do our own thing. It's much easier, but you'll get in trouble. I guarantee. And then you'll rest back on God. Make it easy for ourselves. Come to God first. Develop that habit of listening to God's voice. Then it goes on. It says, if you keep my commands, you will remain, again, remain, that word, abide in my love. There's no better place to be. But we obey because we belong. Remember? We obey because we belong already. We don't obey to belong. We don't have to earn anything from God. And if there's nothing else you remember from the sermon, remember that. We obey because we belong, not to belong. In the previous verses in the same chapter, Jesus speaks of himself as the vine. And we are the branches, or you are the branches. If you abide, that word again, remain in me, you will follow and do what I say. Love does and should respond to love. Now in verse 12, it says, my command is this. He goes on, my command is this agape, that you love each other as I have loved you. You agape each other as I have loved you. Now that's a high order. That's a high calling. Love one another as I have loved you. You can, I've said this before, you can choose your friends, but you can't choose your family. We are family. We are whānau. That brings obligations to us, to one another. How we relate to one another is important. It's critically important, especially in the world we live in now. Now, next week, I'll expand upon that, and I'll give you a model that Kate and I came across recently, which is awesome because it's exactly what we're doing here at St. Mary's. So I'll expand upon what that looks like, loving one another with Christ at the center of that community. So do come and pass the word around, get people to come in, because it's important for us to actually be on the same page as we go ahead this year as a church. Love one another as I have loved you. This is John 13:14. Again, why? And Jesus says, for by this men and women shall know that you are my disciples. A couple of friends of mine, when I wasn't a Christian, Steve and Ellie, they were a lovely Christian couple. They were very cool down in Dunedin. I liked them because they were cool. And I want to spend time with them. I remember going to Nelson with them. I've told the story before, but it's worth telling again. And they stopped in the middle of the street. They bumped into these people. I thought, my immediate thought was, why are you talking to these people? Because they didn't look very cool. All right, I'm a young, 19, 20-year-old. And but they obviously had something in common and they really cared for each other. And I thought, there's something about this that's different from other people in the world. This is the agape love that I'm talking about, our love for one another. It's one of the biggest witnesses we can have to a world in need of agape love that cries out for love, doesn't know what it is because we haven't got enough words for it. Now, this message of loving one another as I have loved you is consistent with Jesus, and it's consistent with Paul in the New Testament. Paul says we must forbear with one another and walk in love, even as Christ loved us, to the Ephesians, the Ephesian church. Guys, this sort of love does involve suffering at times and sacrifice. True love will involve some suffering and some sacrifice at times, a lot of joy as well. But this is the nature of agape love. Let's not delude ourselves. Also, be aware too that God is not averse to tough love. Saying no. Drawing boundaries. Confronting bad attitudes or actions in love. Now, what is the key for this when we're dealing with things with one another and with in the workplace and with family? The key question we ask ourselves, particularly if we're having a conflict, is what I'm about to say or do, is it based in love? Is a loving thing to say? Is a loving action? That's the key question we ask ourselves. That's the key question I ask myself when we're dealing with matters as a staff. Is how am I relating or speaking to someone? Is it based in love? In agape love? Am I calling out an action just because I'm angry? Or is it because this person's my brother or sister and I care about them? Even if the attitude is not agreeable. It's the same with family. I know in families, it's interesting. My grandmother had a sister emigrate over from Canada, and they were going to buy a farm together, and the relationship went bad. They never spoke to each other ever again. Does people hear about things like that with families, or maybe your family is like that as well? Over something probably very minor. Because there is this fear that stops us from actually speaking to one another in love. We can only be responsible for our own behaviors. But love should be our motivation, agape love. So, coming to land. So asking that key question of ourselves, is this a loving action? Is this a loving thing to say? Is it based upon the motive of love? As a manager, we should ask ourselves that. As a leader, as a wife, as a husband, particularly when we have conflict, as a son, as a daughter, when we're dealing with our parents, our elderly parents, as a priest, as a lawyer, a lecturer, a diplomat, as a retiree, as a neighbor, as an accountant, as a student, is this a loving thing to say or do? That is our key basis for our relationships with one another, especially when we have conflict. It won't always look, the result will not always look like what you expect it to look like, okay? God's into tough love, but the result will be a fruitful result if we do these things in love for ourselves and for others and for our community. Finally, look, faith is a critical aspect of this as well. It's from faith that all the graces proceed. But both Jesus and Paul count faith useless if it does not manifest itself in love. The love of God and mankind, this is the highest expression of our relationship with our Maker and our fellow human. Always when we do weddings, it's always 2 Corinthians. Yeah, always 2 Corinthians. But Paul says in that, there's faith, hope, and love. Okay, but the greatest of these is love. Agape love. Divine love. That can be tough love. Amen.